Support for this podcast comes from Northrop Grumman, developing space systems that provide operational weather and climate data. On the web at northropgrummanglobalsecurity.com.
Well, if you're not out there on the sea cruise, maybe you're packing your trunk, you're loading it into the car, you're handing mom and dad a box of tissues and bidding your family adieu because maybe you're going to college. You have lots of stuff on your mind, perhaps like, can you have a party with low flush toilets? Yeah. Is pizza compostable? What's more sustainable, kegs or cans? And where's the place, the best place, for your worm bin? Doesn't sound very much like the challenges faced by those frat boys in Animal House, does it? Well, no, these students are part of a quiet but growing green college campus movement. Students are organizing extreme green co-ops. Universities are opening sustainability offices. And what students and universities are doing to green the college life, well, what's up next? We'll find out. That's what we're going to talk about today. Here's the question for you. Would you take part in greening your campus? Would you choose to attend a college based on its green rating? How green is it? And these colleges are being rated. And if you have some green college stories to share with us, give us a call. Our number is 1-800-989-8255. Where should that worm bin go? Maybe you have a good suggestion for us, if not in the kitchen. 1-800-989-TALK. And if you're on Twitter, you can tweet us at SciFry, at SCI. FRI. Let me introduce my guests. Avital Binstock is the lifestyle editor of Sierra Magazine and the editor of Sierra Club's Green Life blog. She was in charge of Sierra's brand new Coolest Schools ranking, which lists their top picks in sustainable schools. She joins us from KQED in San Francisco. Welcome to Science Friday.
Thank you so much for having me, Ira.
You're welcome. Scott Carlson is a senior reporter at the Chronicle of Higher Education. He joins us from our studios in Washington.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Benjamin Jakubowski is a senior at Oberlin College in Ohio and survived a year in a student-organized greenhouse on campus. We'll find out what that was like. He joins us from Minnesota Public Radio in St. Paul. Welcome to Science Friday.
Thanks for having me, Ira.
Yeah, you're welcome. Let's talk about your lifestyle blog, Avital. Tell us about the coolest schools ranking. How do you pick the coolest schools? What are the top five?
Yes. Okay. So this was in Sierra Magazine, and we do this every year. This is our fourth year doing it. Our top five this year, number one was Green Mountain College, a tiny little school in Vermont, 800 students. Number two was Dickinson College in Pennsylvania. Number three was Evergreen State College in Washington. Number four was the University of Washington. And number five was Stanford University in California.
And what did you have to do to get in the running here? How do you choose the green schools?
Well, the number one thing you had to do was to fill out our questionnaire. We sent out a 10-page questionnaire of 10 different categories that we consider sustainability-related. We sent it to 900 schools, and we explained to them what they were doing. A lot of them already knew, since this is our fourth year doing it. Mm-hmm. And they would fill out our questionnaire, send it back to us, you know, all online, PDF, of course. We wouldn't want them to print it out.
And what was the most important answer that got them in the top rankings?
I would say the most important answer this year was actually different than the most important answer last year. And this year it was the question of where do you get your energy? What is your power source?
Uh-huh. And so if you got yours from a green source, you got good points for that.
Yes, you were much likelier to do better on our rankings.
And the second, what would be the second important answer?
I think the other answer is kind of more equal. We really had about 7 or 8 questions in each category, but on the question of energy supply, there were really only two, which came down to where do you get your energy? Mm-hmm. You know, how do you heat your buildings?
Yeah, that is important for saving energy and for being green.
It is.
Yeah, Ben, describe for us your living situation last year on this green co-op on campus. What was it like?
Sure. So I lived in Seed House on the Oberlin College campus. And Seed House, Seed stands for Student Experiment in Ecological Design. Excuse me. And the house is a duplex. There are four residents on each side. And in the house, we've kind of challenged each other to try to adopt more sustainable lifestyles. So that included things like early in the fall, we had a house meeting where we decided through the winter we would keep the thermostat set at 58 degrees. We did graywater reclamation in our bathrooms. We composted. We tried to run a garden through the fall and spring, among other different kind of programs we developed.
So. Was it tough coming up with a consensus among all the housemates about what, you know, 58 degrees is pretty chilly?
It is. You know, it was somewhat of a challenge. Actually, a lot of people wanted to go cooler, surprisingly.
Is that right? Wear sweaters instead?
Exactly. You just wear sweaters and jackets and, you know, eventually you get used to it. But
you would have loved 1976.
I think I might have. What we realized eventually, though, is that one of the goals of Seed House and other sustainable houses is to kind of serve as a model for your campus and your community, which means that you have to be inviting. You have to allow people to be comfortable when they come and visit. So we ended up deciding that 58 degrees was warm enough that when people came, they'd be comfortable and cool enough that we could really have some significant energy savings.
And energy savings, I remember, I'm thinking back to those days of energy savings. They used to have phrases like shower with a friend to conserve hot water. Was that on your list, or at least conserving hot water in the shower?
It was. We didn't shower with a friend. That wasn't a policy in the house. But
different
we did have
era.
Shower. Different era, exactly. We did have shower timers, though. And one half of the house chose to log shower times. The other half we chose not to, after having some discussions on privacy, and people were concerned about, you know, loss of privacy and that sort of situation. But on average, I think we were trying to hit about a 2.5-minute shower, which is, you know, it's not as hard as it sounds, but some days you definitely wish it's a little bit longer.
Oh, yes. All right. We'll talk about some more of those days. We're going to take a short break and come back and talk lots more with Avital Bienstock, Scott Carlson, and Benjamin Jacobowski. And your number, our number, 1-800-989-8255. Share with us your experiences of going green on your campus. What are they doing over there? And what kinds of things would you like to do? And what kinds of things are you and your classmates doing? You can also tweet us at SciFry. At SCIFRI. Stay with us. We've got lots more to go. I'm Ira Flatow. This is Science Friday from NPR. You're listening to Science Friday from NPR. We're talking about green college campuses. What are you doing on your university or college campus? What are your college campuses doing? How are they going greener? What can you expect to see when you get to college this semester? Our number, 1-800-989-8255. You can tweet us at SciFry, at SCIFRI. Scott Carlson, you're a senior reporter at the Chronicle of Higher Education. Are colleges now jockeying for students by offering greener campuses?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that there are a lot of colleges that are looking to raise their visibility and sustainability because they realize that college students value sustainability as an aspect of what the college does. And that's because, you know, students are smart kids and they're heading into a different kind of world than the world we lived in the 20th century. I mean, they're heading into a world that's going to have climate change as a problem, may have problems with energy, may have problems with industrial agriculture, and may have problems with water and so on. So, yeah, colleges definitely need to address this as an issue.
And do they attack it in different ways? Is some people work on the food, some people work on the energy saving in the buildings, or some people, maybe some colleges install, solar wind or power or something like that?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, one thing about the cool schools list, I think that you have to keep in mind, and that is that you know, it's a snapshot of what colleges are doing, and an incomplete and hazy snapshot at that, just because of the methodology behind it. Sustainability and the way that colleges are taking it on is a very, very complicated and holistic approach to campus management. So it's hard to sort of capture all of that in one piece. And colleges are working on different aspects of it, depending on where they are. Mm-hmm. I mean, different things depending on where a college is situated, they're going to have different priorities. They're going to have different things that they can attack easily and things that are harder to attack.
We have some tweets, very interesting tweets coming in from folks in universities. One says that California State University in Bakersfield is building solar panel structures to shade the parked cars and supplement energy use that way. That seems like a really interesting way of getting shade and getting power.
That's happening in New Jersey. It's also happening in Arizona. It's happening in a number of places, yes. They're finding previously unused spaces to put in power and to make use of that space.
Mm-hmm. Another tweet says that Fort Lewis College in Durango, Colorado, spent more money on high-tech irrigation systems and recycled buildings.
There's a lot of interesting things going out there. If you look at the University of New Hampshire, for example, University of New Hampshire established a landfill gas burning program. So what they would do is they piped landfill gas from a nearby landfill. It's of course a methane gas, so it's flammable. They clean up that gas and then they run it through a generator, and they're able to generate electricity to power the campus through that gas.
Mm-hmm. Benjamin Jakubowski, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Tell me what your life there as you organize this greenhouse on campus. Did it take a while for everybody to accept this, or did you know as a student that if you wanted to live in this house, you had to go in with the ground rules this way?
Yeah. Well, the house is the residents are selected by an application process, mm-hmm. so everybody has to be, you know, at least somewhat committed to the idea of increasing the sustainability or improving the sustainability of their own life to even apply and then be accepted. I think one of the challenges that we faced is trying to, once we were all selected to live in the house for the year, we faced a challenge of trying to understand what sustainability meant to each of us. Because for some people, you know, it has such a kind of amorphous definition that for some people, that meant, you know, just taking shorter showers. Some people, that meant trying to really make the garden something that was producing enough food for the household. It took on many meanings that we had to kind of reconcile. So.
Let's go to the phones. Patrick in Laramie, Wyoming. Hi, Patrick.
Hi, how are you?
Hi there. Go ahead.
Hi. I'm sorry?
No, you can go ahead.
I've been teaching on the campus at the University of Wyoming, and the university has a composting program for garbage, organic garbage, and I thought I'd do them one better after reading Joseph Jenkins' New Manure Handbook. And I've been, since May, composting all of our organic material, including feces and urine. It goes into a pile that is referred to as a thermophilic compost, and the heat generated from the material reaches 130, 140 degrees, and after a two-year period, it should turn into rich humus.
Mm-hmm. And do you get is this a course you teach, or you get the students involved with this?
No, I haven't presented it yet. I'm going to wait until I'm sure that I can get the result that I'm hoping for.
Mm-hmm. Well, we wish you good luck.
Thank you.
Thanks for calling. 1-800-989-8255 is our number. And if you'd like to share with us what kinds of stuff is going on. You know, this seems like, and I'll ask you, all three of you, Avital, Scott, and Benjamin, it seems like this is a quiet revolution here. You know, we don't hear much about it. It's not like the old days on college campuses, people protesting, doing things like that. This is sort of trickling quietly onto universities. Avital, am I reading that correctly?
You know, I don't know if I would say it was quiet, but mm-hmm. that might be because of my role in receiving all of these surveys and hearing everything that everyone is doing about it. But, you know, students really, really, they really care about this. Now, I mean, I would say that I would go as far as to say that this is really the issue of the day. And students today really care a lot about climate change. And my impression is that campus activism around this issue is booming. And that, in fact, a lot of people mm-hmm. feel that stopping climate change is maybe to students of this decade, maybe what stopping apartheid, let's say, in South Africa was to students of the 80s, or maybe not as loud as the Vietnam protests of the 60s and 70s, but certainly the passion level is there.
Are they passionate enough that they're willing to disrupt campus life if they don't get the kind of results they're looking for from the responses from the colleges and the universities?
I don't know about disrupting campus life, but I know that they really do petition their administrations really heavily, and that mm-hmm. a lot of administrations take into consideration these movements and their endowments mm-hmm. based on what students are demanding.
Scott Carlson, you agree?
I would say that it is really one of the most important movements that's happening in higher education right now. And evidence of that is that, you know, the Chronicle has established a beat for me that's focusing almost entirely at some points on sustainability. It's not the type of revolution, though, where students are going to be out picketing. They definitely are addressing concerns about their campus and how green their campus is, but it's more of a cooperative kind of revolution. I think the college administrators know that they need to get there, too.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to Ian in Gainesville. Hi, Ian.
Hi.
Hi there. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I go to the University of Florida, and right now, I mean, they're doing a few things to work on sustainability. We have they encourage the use of reusable cups that they give us a small financial incentive for. And right now, a bunch of students, we have a club, Gators for Sustainable Campus, and they're trying to get the university to turn off the lights at night because we have massive buildings and stadiums, and the university chooses to keep those lights on at night. And with budget cuts, it doesn't seem to make sense for them either. So we don't understand why they're doing it, so we're trying to work on that.
All right, so are they at least talking to you about the issue?
Yeah, reluctantly, I guess. they're trying to work on it, but I guess the movement has been growing on campus, and I would agree it's not a type of movement where there's petitioning or anything. It's just we join clubs and we encourage recycling and everyone to kind of think green, I guess.
All right, interesting stuff. Thanks for calling. Have a good weekend.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you too.
1-800-989-8255 is our number. Let's go to Allison in Washington, D.C. Hi, Allison.
Hello, Ira. How are you?
Fine. How are you?
Doing great.
Thank you.
I am I'm a green consumer. I buy a lot of green products. I'm getting ready to finally renovate my house, and I'm excited to use a lot of energy-efficient products in what we're doing. I'm curious, though. A lot of the products I look at, universities, the product will say, this was used at this university, this was used at that university, say like a lighting system. I'm wondering, what are the universities using for their criteria for these investments? Is that like a good way for me to shop as a consumer?
Right. Should you believe the label as a recommendation from XYZ University?
Yeah. Do they do anything over and above, say, looking at LEED certification?
All right. Good question. Let me get Scott Carlson in on this. Scott?
They're doing all sorts of things to try to bring in different kinds of approaches to sustainability. If the caller is asking,
guess gets nothing.
Whether the universities are sort of promoting products, I'm not sure I understand the question there. But
I think she's saying that she goes to buy green product that says on the product, hey, this is endorsed by XYZ University as being, a green, good, sustainable product. Should she trust that? What standards are the universities using? Are they is a LEED certified building good enough? That sort of thing.
Well, these are standards that are not necessarily endorsed by the universities. They're endorsed by various organizations. I mean, USGBC, the U.S. Green Building Council, is behind the LEED standards, and the universities are using it just the same as everyone else. Mm-hmm. So, it's not necessarily an endorsement from the college. I guess it's just standards out there.
Benjamin, what have you learned from these years now that you've had this greenhouse on campus? What kind of changes do you make from year to year? How do you tweak the system to make it better?
So for Seed House, typically, and I think partly that's because one of the missions of Seed House is to try to make sustainability something that the whole campus is involved in. Mm-hmm. So instead of living in Seed House for 3 years or something and then graduating, people come, experiment with different lifestyle changes or the different behaviors that we've adopted at Seed House, and then move on and hopefully take those practices with them to their next housing setting.
Is there more than one Seed House? Is there enough desire or demand that you could make a few of them instead of just one?
Yeah, I really think there is enough desire, and Oberlin College has been responding to that desire. They just recently built a sustainability-themed first-year dorm and recently opened a sustainably-themed hall in one of the existing dorms. So at Seedhouse was one of the first sustainable living options on campus. And as there was so much demand to live there, I think the college really responded by, you know, creating alternative options for sustainable living.
Let's go to the phones to Bo. And is it Keshena, Wisconsin?
Yeah, it's Keshena, Wisconsin.
Hi there. Go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Good afternoon. I work in the Sustainable Development Institute here at the College of Menominee Nation, which is a tribal college located in northeast Wisconsin. And we've looked at sustainability, you know, through a visioning session. We asked the campus community to envision a sustainable tribal college, and they shared with us what they, you know, what the community felt was a sustainable college. And, you know, that led to a lot of different initiatives we're looking at. We did a greenhouse gas emissions inventory, where now, because of the because we're able to quantify that, we're able to offer free rides to our students, staff, and faculty to and from campus to help reduce our greenhouse gas emissions. And we did a waste characterization study, you know, where we want to be a zero-waste campus. So we dug through the trash and made these different piles and had the students involved with sorting the waste. And, you know, by doing that, we were able to determine that we're recycling already 70% of our waste by weight.
No kidding.
And, yeah, so, I mean, there's a lot to it. And the thing we're I guess, bumping up against to is how far do we want to take it?
Right.
How sustainable do you want to be? We did a food miles study, and a lot of our food is coming from over, you know, 800 miles away to get to campus, and we're surrounded by this beautiful and rich forest.
Right.
You know, so and there's some component to this. To being, you know, the autochthony, you know, the people come from the land, that there's the food can come from the forest. You know, we're trying to revitalize that, and there's this gardening revolution going on here in the reservation that's fueling this food sovereignty issue. You know, so there's a lot of opportunities we have here, but, you know, it just depends on how far we're willing to take it and if the funding is there to realize our vision.
Right. Well, good luck to you.
Yeah.
We're talking about sustainability and green campuses this hour on Science Friday from NPR. And I guess Avital, Scott, and Benjamin, figuring out what your carbon footprint is and what the best way to decrease that is a challenge to everybody. Because, you know, just because it's grown locally doesn't mean you're using less energy on something that might come from California, let's say, with food belted.
It's definitely very complex, no doubt about it. And the last caller, the comment from the last caller was very interesting, because I think once these colleges start to really look closely at what they're doing in terms of sustainability, they discover that they're doing a lot more in some ways that they didn't know about. And then they also discover that there's all of these ways that they can improve. They might not have looked at the food miles connected to what they're serving there before. And then it makes you realize what kind of resources you have around you.
Avital, where do you go with your school, cool schools from here?
You mean for next year?
Yeah, for next year. Do you have a different criteria? Are you just going to tweak it up a little?
Yeah, we're constantly refining our criteria. And actually, this year's criteria was different than last year's.
Right.
And we encourage people to contact us with, you know, any input that they have, any you know, any critiques, any encouragement. And the results, this year's survey was the result, actually, of a lot of sustainability coordinators and general readers getting involved and talking to us and saying, you know, it would be great if you put online your methodology, your scoring key, so that we can see it and that we can study for next year what we'd like to do to go green. It's also going to be a result of the priorities of the Sierra Club. This year we talked a lot to the conservation experts at the Sierra Club, and they were really the ones who emphasized that we should emphasize the power sources.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's a living, breathing project where, you know, we're always trying to refine it more and more. And it's hopefully will be better this year than it was last year, just like this year is better than it was last year.
Of course. And Benjamin, what's your plans for the future on GreenWise?
Well, I think at Oberlin College, we'll just want to try to continue pushing forward the culture of sustainability we've been trying to build with all of these different living options and, you know, student initiatives. So I'm looking forward to returning in the fall and, you know, really seeing how much things have changed over the summer. So.
All right. I wish you good luck.
Thank you.
And we'll check in from that one from time to time. Let us know how green you're getting.
Absolutely.
If you're all pushing and you're all trying to figure out how green, you know, where that limit is, that would be interesting to find out how green you can go. Well, I want to thank my guest, Avital Bienstock, is the lifestyle editor at Sierra Magazine and the editor of Sierra Club's Green Life blog, Scott Carlson, senior reporter at the Chronicle of Higher Education, and Benjamin Jakubowski is a senior at Oberlin College. Have a great semester, all of you. Thanks for taking time to join us.
Thank you, Ira.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
You're welcome. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to bring Margaret Atwood's going to be with us, talking about her book, The Year of the Flood, 1-800-989-8255. If you want to talk with Margaret, returning to Science Friday, stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm Ira Flatow. This is Science Friday from NPR.